Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday, I'm reading the story of the entire Russian government resigning. And I'm going, you know, why? Why would they just up and go, you know what, screw this, we're going home? Turns out, as I understand, Putin's making some moves because evidently he's being term limited out, as I understand this. And I guess trying to move some power over to like the prime minister because maybe he takes over and now he's in control for life. Seems very, very, I'm not going to say Trumpian because it actually seems like a smart move. But here to share some thoughts on, you know, why did the entire Russian government just resign? And maybe can we get ours to resign? I've asked our good friend Sarah Kendzior to come talk with us. Sarah's a fantastic author and the host of Gaslit Nation, one of my favorite podcasts. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So why? Why'd they all just up and go, you know what, screw you, we're going home?
I mean, no one is completely sure about this yet. Like, I've been reading, you know, Russia experts to see what their thoughts are. No one is completely clear, but, you know, Putin has done this before. He has rotated his position between, president and prime minister, but ultimately has stayed in control of Russia for now 20 years. And that seems to be the game plan for the future. The individual he selected as his successor, I can't even remember his name because he's kind of a nobody. And he's just basically there as a kind of, you know, cipher to be filled with the Putin agenda, you know, should something happen. I don't really see any signs, though, that Putin is going to relinquish power in a meaningful way. It's more likely a little endeavor to change up titles, to extend, his stay in power and, kind of override those term limit laws, which is something he's already done. But as for everyone else, as for those other positions, we'll see who fills them. But what people need to remember is that a lot of the power in Russia, it's not just the Kremlin, it's the Kremlin, it's oligarchs, it's the Russian mafia, it's this kind of, you know, three-legged network that holds up a mafia state apparatus, and that's not going to change.
Yeah, so these people, they really didn't matter then, is if I'm getting that right.
Well, it matters. I mean, it matters to people living in Russia, like who is governing them locally. But the sort of broader structure, you know, of political and economic conditions, like I don't see that changing in a meaningful way. You know, whoever comes in and replaces, these officials is going to govern in the same way because they're held in control by corporate dominance, by organized crime, and by Putin and his, you know, little gang of cronies. And they're just going to, you know, switch up titles, and it's probably going to be, to some extent, business as usual. But, you know, a lot is changing in the world, and they're going to have to roll with that flow. So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see where it takes us. Let's move here. Today, the articles of impeachment read, the swearing in. We saw the, you know, the John Roberts take the oath, and then he turned and he gave all the senators the oath, of which half of them are going to break the oath. Thoughts?
Yeah, it's a sad day. I mean, we knew they were going to break their oaths. Like McConnell and Graham and others announced in advance that they were preemptively exonerating Trump because they're in his little crime cult and he's their king, and that's how they're treating him. And, you know, they're going through this like facsimile of a process. Obviously I'm glad they impeached in the House, but this is yet another reason that I thought these hearings needed to go on longer, that we needed to have an actual meaningful process and not this sort of, you know, pantomime of democracy that we're probably going to get. I mean, there's still some things up in the air with witnesses and obviously all this new information about the apparent plot to assassinate Marie Yovanovitch. But, you know, this administration has done so many atrocious, illegal, dangerous, America-destroying things. And we needed an open process for all of this to be played out instead of what the Senate wants, which is either, you know, a trial that is closed to the public. Some of them are demanding that. We're also seeing signs that, as I predicted for about a year, they want a show trial. Now they're going after Comey. They also are trying to go after my co-host from Gaslit Nation, Andrea Chalupa, after her sister, Alexandra Chalupa. Like, they've put out lists of other people. They want Hunter Biden. You know, if they can get their show trial, I think suddenly all their little concerns about cameras and not having C-SPAN are going to go away, because that's the kind of goal that they want. And none of this is in the name of accountability or democracy from the Republican end. Like, none of them are stepping up and actually doing their jobs.
Yeah, because there had been a moment of hope where, you know, Susan Collins supposedly had a little group, I guess Mike Lee and Rand Paul and the guy from Indiana, I guess, they were talking about, you know, possibly having a little group of to do something, and then she, you know, never mind.
Yeah, I mean, those Rand Paul and Mike Lee were just pissed about Iran because they are Putin's lackeys. I mean, they're concerned. Were fine in their own right. Like, I didn't disagree with them. But the motivation behind that was that these are people, you know, who are paid off by the Kremlin, who visit the Kremlin, who seem to be obeying Kremlin orders. People are nuts if they put their faith in Susan Collins or any of these little Republicans that for some reason people like to prop up as symbols of hope, and they have never come through. It's like, abandon all hope, ye who enter the Republican Party. Like, there is no one in there. The only one who had any guts and any integrity was Justin Amash, and he quit because that wasn't respected at all. You know, they were very angry with him for that. So now he's an independent, and there isn't anyone in there. And people have to stop putting up this pretense that a party that has become criminal to the core, you know, even if its members didn't want it to be that way, they have been contaminated by it. Like, that's what happens when Michael Cohen is managing your finances and Trump and a mafia syndicate is managing your party. Like, that's why so many of them keep, you know, dropping out and retiring early, including, you know, big rising people like Paul Ryan, who no one ever thought would, like, quit in his 40s. Like, they're out because they don't want to be in this orbit. Because to be in this orbit is to be terrified all the time. It's to constantly be wondering, you know, if someone's going to kill you or if somebody is going to blackmail you or threaten you. And that's, you know, people just don't want to talk about this openly, even when it's like super, super open. Like, we're getting masses of text messages about it. They still don't want to call it out in those terms. Although, I guess now Lev Parnas is on Maddow, saying a lot of the same stuff I've been saying for 4 years, but, you know, now that it comes from the guy who ran Fraud Guarantee, we can all just take it seriously as the truth.
Like, no, absolutely.
That's how this country works. Like, welcome to America. What the hell, you know?
You know, George Carlin used to say, we love our BS right out in the open where we can smell it.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's ridiculous. And, you know, I don't know if you're going to ask me about him, but I'll just say for the record, do not trust this guy. Like, people just keep falling for the dumbest stuff. They fall for Susan Collins. They fall for Lev Parnas. Like, Fraud Guarantee worked with Fred Trump, then worked with Donald Trump, then was on Giuliani's goon squad, then nearly carried out a hit on a U.S. ambassador. And they're like, oh, my God, my new resistance hero. It's like, what is wrong with you, Lord? Like, this is serious. You can't have this savior syndrome where you just latch on to, like, the grossest, sleaziest, most openly deceptive people. And we've gone through this so many times. Like, every, you know, proclaimed hero has failed. Every sort of, you know, villain that they wanted to rehabilitate has failed. They are all lying. Like, for God's sake, you have to have higher standards. I don't know. People are losing their minds. I may be among them at this point.
So what do you think about Lev Parnas?
I mean, I think in some senses he's telling the truth, and we know that because we can also see the truth. Like, everyone keeps forgetting that they have confessed to these crimes.
Yep.
They're forgetting that people like Maria Yovanovitch got up on and testified about all this stuff. So it's like, wait a second, the woman who's the victim of this came out and told everybody what happened. We all knew her life had been threatened. We knew Fiona Hill's life had been threatened. We know Alexander Vindman's life has been threatened. And it's like, you only believe it, like, when a mobster comes and is like, yeah, that happened. I mean, hello, like, where have people been? They've been threatening people the entire time they've been in office. They threatened Stormy Daniels. They threatened the judge at the Manafort trial. They threatened the judge In the Roger Stone trial, they have threatened countless journalists. They threatened Jamal Khashoggi, and then he was murdered and dismembered. Like, this is a mafia syndicate in the White House. This is what they do. They threaten people, and then sometimes they murder people. And it's like, that's a crisis. And the fact that Congress is just kind of like, oh, gee whiz, you know, I guess we'll impeach on a couple of articles. And, you know, Rachel Maddow is like, you know, woo, ratings bonanza. Let me take a big picture of me with this disgusting mobster grinning. Like, oh, my God. I don't think they get it. Or maybe they just, you know, need to do what they need to do to kind of function in this environment. But it's grotesque. And, you know, and I'm not holding it against Maddow for interviewing him, because I think that given the way, obviously, that the Senate wants to construct these hearings, it's not like, you know, Parnas is going to be testifying. So he's getting whatever information he wants to get out there. But trust me, whatever he's putting out is selective for a reason. It's reminiscent of Michael Cohen in that respect. But to smile and grin with this person who is a criminal, you know, who is a criminal tied to violence, organized crime. Like, this is nothing to laugh about or feel joyous about or be like, ooh, we've got the inside scoop. This is something you should be frightened about. And, you know, I shouldn't need to point that out. That should be obvious by, like, the body count and the loss of rights and the suffering and the open, aspiring autocracy that we've endured for 4 years. But, you know, Folks
going to
do what they going to do.
Yeah, no, you're right. But, you know, I look at this, and, you know, yesterday I talked about, you know, the text of, you know, of, you know, from this Robert Hyde of, you know, how much are we willing to pay, or how much, you know, what's the price? And, you know, immediately I got somebody who said, well, he's just a drunken idiot. You know, there's nothing serious about that. I'm going, drunken idiots carry out stuff like this all the time. Just because he's a drunken idiot doesn't mean you just erase it away. He wrote it. Someone responded to it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know why everybody thinks that these criminals, these seasoned criminals, all need to be polished geniuses. Like, they just need to be good at doing crime. Like, that's how Trump is. He doesn't have geopolitical acumen. He is good at spin, and he's good at crime, because he's been doing both of those things for like 40 years. You know, same with Manafort. Great at crime. Crime machine. Days long streak. Didn't get caught. Or if he got caught, he didn't get punished. Like, this is what they do. And some of them are going to be, you know, drunk and incapacitated, and some of them are going to be slick and quiet, and some of them are going to, you know, maybe try for, you know, an honest sort of shot at redemption, which I guess the closest to that is Michael Cohen. But that's what the situation reminds me of. It's like, people seem to forget that nearly a year ago, Michael Cohen stood under oath to Congress and talked about how Trump was basically running a mafia operation out of the White House. He talked about how Trump had instructed him, Michael Cohen, to threaten over 500 people. And he talked about how Trump wasn't going to leave in 2020, even if he lost the election. Like, that was all said to Congress. And the immediate after effect of that was basically nothing. Like, Cohen went to jail on the charges that he'd already been given, and the scheduled hearings for other mobsters or mob-affiliated actors, people like Felix Sater, were all suddenly canceled. And then the Mueller report gets shut down, and then basically nothing happens in terms of congressional action until November. And so all of that is a bad sign. Like, I don't know exactly what people think Jeff Parnas talking on MSNBC is going to do. It's like, he'll give us information that we pretty much already had.
Right.
He'll tell us some stuff that's, you know, worse, I guess, than we already knew. But who is going to act on it? Like, who is going to actually hold anybody accountable? Because the syndicate behind this is a vast apparatus, and the people who could hold it accountable have been purged, which is what happens when an autocracy comes to power and you let it sit there for 3.5 years.
No, you're absolutely right. And it's, you know, it's one of these things where you look at Parnas, he's a slimy dude. But, you know, he's singing to save his neck. And what he's singing is, Trump knew all about it. Giuliani knew all about it. They all knew. Devin Nunes was involved, meetings with all of them. Now, all the stuff that we've been talking about for this entire presidency, this guy's kind of saying, it's true. And here, here are the texts and all the written stuff.
But he's not the first one to say it. It's like,
true.
Trump said it's true. Donald Trump Jr. said it was true. Like, you know, Giuliani has said it's true. Trump's lawyers has said it's true. They've all been confessing consistently to crimes for 3 years. And it's like, again, this sort of collective amnesia takes hold where people are acting as if what Lev Parnas is saying, they're hearing it for the first time, where they actually heard a lot of this from the victim's perspective at the actual impeachment hearings. And it's like, yeah, of course they were all in on it. And one thing I'm wondering is, you know, a tactic of this administration has been to try to bring the appearance of divides and chaos instead of autocratic consolidation, which is what's actually going on. You know, they pretend that there are all these feuds, like with people who still hang around, people like Manafort, who hung around after he allegedly left, Bannon, who is still involved with them. Like, they don't actually leave the fold. And I kind of doubt that Parnas, you know, really feels his life is on the line. I mean, there are multiple people that he's answering to. There are people in the Trump administration, like Barr, who he's now suddenly claiming to be frightened of. I don't really buy that. But then there are people in Russia and in Ukraine, oligarchs and mafiosos, who he is working for and who might actually prove a threat. I think he's probably under some sort of protection from somebody, or he wouldn't be doing this at all. But, you know, this is not a guy you should trust.
Not
at all. Look at the span of his life and all the lies he's told and the crimes he's committed and the company he's kept. Like, this is not a reliable narrator, to say the least. And, you know, it's just shameful that the information out there, that there's such a paucity of it, that he is being put out as the, you know, main source of trust, where this is going to backfire for anybody who believes that, I think.
Yeah. He's a slimy guy, absolutely, without question. Yesterday we had Tom Arnold on the show, and Tom was talking about John Bolton. And there's the belief that John Bolton is now a patriot. In fact, Tom Arnold said, you know, John Bolton's a patriot. He's not going to lie for Donald Trump. Because I think he should have had to testify before these articles moved on to the Senate. I just think you held off for that. But is the mustache going to, is he our savior? And I'm asking that in the most satirical way possible.
Well, good, because he's not either. He can put him in the category of Susan Collins and Lev Parnas and all the other, you know, idiots who people are holding up as saviors. Like, John Bolton is the same warmongering freak that he's always been. Like, all he has now is more leverage and possibly a means to a war. And I think there's some internal debate about what exactly they want to do with Iran, because the, you know, Kremlin-oriented folks may not want this war. Obviously, somebody like John Bolton does. I think that that probably did impact whether or not he testified. But the House should have subpoenaed him. The House should have gone hard. You know, they never really have, and they still aren't. And, you know, I think part of the reason is, like, well, you know, the mafia hijacked America, so they're dealing with that. But that's why they had to deal with that early on. But no, you know, of course he's not trustworthy. Like, he's, you know, behaved in all sorts of illicit ways and, you know, terrible ways. And this is not a heroic person. Like, he wouldn't do the baseline task of testifying to the House. He ignored a subpoena. So, you know, he's useless. He's just out for his book deal and to try to make himself some money and to try to get a war that racks up as many Muslim casualties as possible. That's John Bolton's goal.
So he's not the hero in this, then.
I don't think so. I mean, this is a guy who actively wishes for the death of, you know, Iranians, who's talked about bombing it, who wants preemptive nuke strikes, who, you know, participated in an illegal war in Iraq, and who is ignoring his constitutional duty to Congress right now. So he's never done anything good. I mean, he's just one of these worthless cretins that got dug out of obscurity to be put in Trump's celebrity apprentice of hell in the administration. And it's good he's out of the administration, but again, when I was listing people who, you know, they leave, but they don't really leave, like, he's another one. He's another one who still has that influence.
Yeah. I do want to know why he said, I don't want to be part of your drug deal, though. I want that question answered.
Yeah, I'd like that question answered, too. I mean, I have a lot of questions about, you know, the veracity of this testimony. I mean, I think some of it is, you know, he may have different views on Ukraine and on Iran. I think he had different views about foreign policy than Trump did. I think Bolton wanted to dominate, you know, whatever the United States was going to do in terms of foreign policy. That was always a dream of his. And Trump is too erratic. And, you know, Trump wanted Trump-branded actions. Bolton wanted Bolton-branded actions. I think Bolton saw this thing as likely to blow up in everybody's faces because he does have, you know, actual bureaucratic experience, which most of these goons did not, and was like, no, you know, this is not the kind of sleazy thing that I'm going to do. I'm going to do a sleazy thing the traditional way, like the George W. Bush kind of way. I'm not going to do it the Trump way. So
you're absolutely spot on that. And but I still think we have to find out the answer to that question. Now, we found out this week also that the Russians hacked into this Burisma company. And do we know anything yet about what they got, what they planted, anything? Is this the October surprise?
Yeah, I mean, I guess obvious that Russia thinks the candidate is going to be Biden, and they're going hard after Biden and, you know, trying to smear Hunter Biden. You know, this all strikes me as strange just because I don't think that that's necessarily going to be the candidate, you know, and I don't think there was ever a sort of clear roadmap like there was, you know, by this point with Hillary Clinton. Although even that was a little bit fuzzy as well. And so I don't know exactly what, you know, their obsession is with that. I think more details will come out. I do think it feeds into this whole show trial element where they need to create new villains. They need to, you know, associate the Democrats with the exact same kind of criminality that the Republicans have been doing. It's not the same, like what Hunter Biden did is not the same, for example, as what Jared Kushner or Ivanka Trump or, you know, the other Trump family members have done. And so, but they want to draw those parallels to kind of pound them into the brain of the public.
Yep.
I don't know what Russia itself is going to do with whatever it is, you know, they found. I guess we'll see as the government transitions.
So. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. You know, last question I've got for you, because, you know, November's coming soon. I think, what are we, 292 days away from Election Day, something like that?
Oh, God, that still seems too long, but yeah.
It does. It seems like forever. And you know, look, you know, Tom Arnold last night said Trump's not going to make it to November. He's going to resign, and I completely disagree. But, you know, it's going to come down to the election, and it's going to come down to who we vote for. And I look at someone like Biden as less bad with a lot of the same luggage and the same problems, but just less.
Oh, less bad than Trump? Yeah, I mean, everybody is. Like, I can pick some rando in a supermarket. They're going to be a better president than Trump. I mean, they're I assume, not in the mafia. Like, you know, Biden, my concern with Biden is, honestly, cognitive impairment. And I'm not saying that to be, like, critical or a flip. I'm honestly wondering if mentally he is, you know, up to the task because he's gotten on there in years. And a lot of the times when he speaks, he sounds incoherent. I don't think he's the right president for the moment. I don't think that he has the ability or the strength to hold this country together because we are so battered down that even for an absolutely amazing president, this is going to be a terrible, very challenging, very difficult time. And we need somebody at the absolute top of their game. And Joe Biden at this age is just not that guy. And I also think some of his opinions about reconciliation with the Republicans is delusional. It's like, yes, ideally we would all get along and have a functional bipartisan government. But this is a crime cult. Like, these guys are all implicated in crimes, and their number one concern is going to be protecting themselves. But for us to move forward as a country, people need to actually be held accountable for what they did over the last 3 years and before.
Yeah.
And they have no interest in going down that road. They'll do anything to prevent that. And I don't think Joe Biden understands that.
Yeah, and my fear is whoever the next president is going to get a you know, a criminal Wall Street who's going to, who knows what. Because look, we find out more about the crimes of this administration. We find out more that how mobbed up they are. And the stock market goes to an all-time high.
Yeah, probably. Although, you know, I've been wondering about stock inflation and, you know, certain little tricks that possibly Trump's goons are pulling. I wonder if there'll be another crash if a Democrat wins that's just as fabricated. I don't know. But yeah, whoever's in there is going to have a very hard time. And it should be somebody who is, you know, very well versed in corruption, you know, which is why I want Warren. You know, I know other folks want Sanders. I think it's very good that Sanders at least understands the dangers of corruption. He understands how it's linked to income inequality. You know, Warren does as well. So I'd encourage people to at least sort of look at that slate of, you know, progressive economic policy and tie it to national security, because it is really all one issue at this point, and whoever's in charge needs to get that.
Yeah, I'm with you. So I guess I got to ask then, since you're a Warren supporter, do you believe Biden? Do you believe Sanders said a woman can't win?
I think he possibly said a woman can't win, you know, when he was asked, like, what are some of the barriers that the next candidate may face if they're running. You know, that's a very common thing to say. It's another thing to be on the receiving end of that, you know, if you are a woman or if you're a woman running to office. And, you know, Warren never brought it up, and I'm guessing she didn't bring it up because she didn't think it was that big a deal, because she's probably heard it about 10 billion times in the same way that I have. And, you know, it mildly annoys me. Probably mildly annoyed her. I think it's annoying that we're even having this conversation, especially based on an anonymously sourced article to CNN that was just thrown in like a grenade in the middle of this campaign. And, you know, it seems like Warren wants to move on from it. I think Sanders wants to move on. It's the fan bases, particularly Sanders' fan base, that don't want to move on, and they really should, because our country is a mess domestically. It's a mess internationally. And, you know, we need to be focused on that, you know, and kind of the pettiness of this, the stupidity of this. Like, people need to just push that aside.
I'm with you. Personally, I'll take either one. I'll be happy with either one of them. That simple. Sarah, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. I look forward to talking to you again real soon. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Really good stuff. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.